How do you like me now? Welcome to the podcast that always takes it there. I'm your host, T, from the infamous tblog.com, and now I reside right here on the T Podcast to entertain all of you fine fucking people. Some people say I have a way with words. They really fucking do. Some call me the Tom Brady of blogging, the Conor McGregor of podcasting. Today's topic, I'll get into that, but I'm still the Conor McGregor of podcasting. The white Tupac of screenwriting, Thug Life Till I Die. No, West Side, more East Side. The King of the Bean, a.k.a. Boston. The man who is always, always, always on his grown man shit. Thank you for tuning in. Now let me do what I do here, and that is entertain the shit out of all of you. Today is Tuesday, August 20th, 2019. It is my pre-birthday. It is my birthday eve. That's right. It's the eve of my 42nd birthday. Tomorrow's podcast will be the first annual birthday podcast. I wrote about it for years, 8-9 straight years on T-Blog. I look back year to year, what that year meant to me. I reflect on being a better man. And tomorrow is going to be a doozy of a fucking podcast because this past year was something else, ladies and gentlemen. And I will share that on my birthday tomorrow. Happy birthday to T. Today, I want to get into a bunch of topics. Today, whenever you listen to the fucking podcast, I have a lot on my mind, a lot of things trending, a lot of stuff in the news, entertainment news, the sports world. First, before I get into that, a bit of a break. We tried recording off and on. We got a lot of stuff that we tried to get to. We tried a new system, new software. We finally got it up and running. It works perfectly. You got one podcast out of us last week. And now B-Lo's taking a little bit of break. It's the summer. People got shit to do. People got friends and family. Maybe people need to take a break from work, break from a podcast. Maybe people need to go on a vacation. Maybe you just need to enjoy a fucking day off. I went away. I enjoyed my time off. B-Lo needs his time off to do B-Lo things. But B-Lo will be returning in about 2 weeks. I promise you that. And we'll be back to banging out a weekly podcast together, doing T and B-Lo shit. The repertoire, the rapport. You know how we do it. Get back to the shriek. Big update on the streak yet again. Oh, that fucking streak. Strictly Dickly, all our topics about dating and romance and everything in between from two guys in their 40s point of view. And obviously, T and B look at topical. Tonight, though, is just T again topical. T, me, third person, but me. Riding solo for the next 2 weeks. I'll give you two podcasts, I promise you that. And tonight, I want to get into a couple things. Now, before I get into the whole namesake of this fucking podcast, a little bit of Punchy Connor and the Nasty Food Trend, I got to talk about last week. I had my West Coast fam in from town, my West Coast family. Good friends. A girl that I went to college with, we were really close. She got married, went out to California, got married out there, has a son. Really good close friend of mine, always there for me. They always reached out, her and her husband. Yeah, he's also a writer as well, screenwriter, dabbles in that world. Really cool dude, funny people. Every time I'm in Los Angeles, anytime I'm pitching scripts, anytime I'm out there with agents, whatever I'm doing, or if I'm just visiting friends out there, I always make sure I drive down to where they live in their area of California and spend time with them. I actually stay with them every time I'm out. So she and I go way back since 1995, freshman year at Northeastern University. And I've known her husband for about a good 10 years now, 10 plus, maybe 12 years, I think. And they came out, and it was good. We got to do some Boston things, me being the best Boston guy most people know. I know the city better than anyone. I told them, and they agreed that you can't get a better tour guide than T. No knocking to the fucking duck tours, quack, quack, motherfuckers. But I do my own thing. I entertain people. I want to go some places that I am a member of. Two other three places that I'm a member of, excluding the MFA, was the Museum of Science. My favorite place in Boston, all-time favorite. I know that place inside and out. I love it. I love sharing it with people I care about. I love bringing friends there, family, somebody I'm dating, anyone that I could bring to the Museum of Science. I love that place. In the New England Aquarium. Yeah, the aquarium is just one giant fishbowl you walk around a fucking spiral walkway to, but it's the aquarium, you know. I've been to better ones around the world, but it's what we have. It's what we have here. I gotta respect Boston, even though it's called the New England Aquarium. Unlike Aquaman, and fucking Aquaman, you watched the beginning of that movie, it said the Boston Aquarium. It wasn't even our aquarium. They had a giant fucking fish tank and all these sharks started rushing it. So it wasn't the New England Aquarium, let alone the Boston Aquarium, but that fucking aquarium that they have in Aquaman does not fucking exist. for all you non-Bostonians out there. But they came out, and it was a good time. After hanging out with me for a little bit and going around Boston, they got to meet my girlfriend, which was really good. They loved her. She loved them. We had a couple of good meals out in the city of Boston. I have to take a step back, and I said it before on the podcast. I read about it on T-Blog. Boston has done come up as far as culinary restaurants and experiences. We have a lot. I know we're not on the scale of a New York City because we're not as large as New York City. But I have to say, there's a lot of chefs and a lot of restaurants that appeal to everyone. You can find something on there, a kid's menu. You could order off the menu. For instance, we had their son with us, and he obviously had order off the kid's menu. And Italian restaurants have decent enough kid's menus to accommodate kids. And one place we went to, an Italian restaurant, where I judge every Italian restaurant by their chicken palm. I'm a chicken palm guy. They didn't have chicken palm on the menu for adults. They had it on the kids' menu. And a waitress, fantastic waitress, she basically said, yeah, we can make that for you off the menu. So I had chicken palm off the menu, and I rated the restaurant based off of that. But Boston is very accommodating. Boston has a lot of options. Boston, whereas tourism and hospitality and hotels and restaurants, I put it right up there. Again, at this point, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'll probably never stop saying it. I've been all over this beautiful fucking country. I've been all over this planet. I've been all over Europe. I put Boston right up there. I still say it's the greatest city in the world. It has everything you need here, from just the history and new technology, the doctors. We actually have the greatest hospitals. We have the greatest schools. A very walkable city. We have the history from the Freedom Trail down to the Charles River. We have a lot of great museums, and we have great people who are loyal to the city. And of course, obviously, we have our sports. You know, I just can't think of any other city that's more well-rounded than that offers everything in that capacity. I'm not saying we hit a 10 on everything, but I say across the board, we're a solid 7.5, and I don't think a lot of other cities can say that. Very clean city, too. And a lot of neighborhoods, that's very walkable. You can get to hop on an Uber or in the train. Yeah, the MBTA needs a lot of fucking work. But other than that, gotta love the city of Boston. And I love them when friends come out here, especially people that I consider my family. So shout out to them. And jumping over to some of the topics tonight. Again, I want to get into, because I use this every time I introduce myself on the podcast. Said it before, I'll say it again. I am a big Conor McGregor fan. I'm a big MMA fan. I'm a big UFC fan. Been down with that shit since the early 90s when my dad was robbing that fucking cable. We had the black box in East Boston before it had weight divisions in it, before Dana White came in and made it a business, made it the UFC. I love MMA. I practice in it. I've been in that sport. I've trained in it. I love Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I love Muay Thai. I love dirty boxing. I love outright boxing. I love grappling. I love watching those dudes fuck each other up. It's kinetic chess. It is something where you're going to mix up these styles. I watch the sport evolve. You really can't have one style. You have to be disciplined in all the mixed martial arts out there. And for anywhere from everything I just named, you have to be able to do all that to be a well-rounded fighter. Conor McGregor is a striker. Conor McGregor has the stand-up skills to fight with anyone. And he got his game down to fight Khabib that time, where he pushed that guy 4 rounds and he possibly could have won that fight. Conor is one of the best of all time. I'll say that. Let's take his little personality and attitude aside. But that is very entertaining. We want somebody like that in the UFC because they don't have those type of personalities. But Conor on his own, as a fighter, he's a warrior. He knows when he's been defeated. He knows when he lost. He knows when he needs to improve. And he entertains the shit out of you. Again, between him and Game of Thrones, that's why I got Kunt. You fucking Kunt. Doesn't say the C word. He calls everybody a Kunt. His accent, his dialect, the way he dresses, the beard, the ink, the tattoos, the money he got from the Floyd Mayweather fight, he's a larger-than-life personality. Now he has the proper whiskey. So he goes around and he talks a lot of shit, but he backs it up. He hasn't been in the ring that often. He's on the contract still. I'm hoping he'll fight again. But the money he made from that Floyd Mayweather fight is rumored to be around $80 to $100 million. Then he invested into the proper whiskey. He has the Austin McGregor clothing line. And he's turning over little businesses out there. He put money into low-income housing in Dublin where he grew up. He does a lot of things. Aside from that, just like me, we're flawed. You know, Conor and I, we have that in common. We make a lot of mistakes. Tough upbringings, tough past, I get that. Conor now, though, with his money, with his attitude, a lot of people saying maybe he's on coke. They're just speculating because he's always bouncing around looking high as a kite. I don't know. I don't want to go with the stereotypical Irishman that's always drunk off whiskey, but the dude is literally walking around with his own fucking whiskey every time you see him. So this version of Conor McGregor, I want him to get back into the ring. I want him to get back to the octagon. I want him to be able to do what the fuck he does and shut people up. Recently, though, the whole topic of this being punchy Conor McGregor, I heard about this. I know this. When you're a celebrity, whether you did something right or wrong, maybe you didn't do anything at all, you're a target. There are going to be a lot of people out there trying to take you down, trying to make a name off of your name, trying to make money off your hard-earned money. So Conor McGregor, with that attitude, with that look, and all that money, and being from another country, he's a big fucking target. So some of the things I take with a grain of salt. I don't know exactly what he's doing sometimes. Sometimes I hear about these lawsuits, sometimes I don't. I heard about something a couple of months ago that he punched an elderly man in a bar, settled outside of court. You know, I mean, a lot of people are saying now, I had a conversation with my buddy, my meal prep guy the other day when I picked up my meals. He was like, I'll take a shot for fucking Conor McGregor for like $5 million, settle out of court. We used to say that as kids. Would you take a shot from Mike Tyson? Mike Tyson is prime, probably would kill the normal guy. But would I take a jab from Conor McGregor for a few million dollars? I'm not that desperate for money. Me, with my attitude, even if it's Conor McGregor, you hit me, odds are I'm probably going to hit you the fuck back. Don't know if I could get even close to fucking fighting Conor McGregor, but I don't back down from any fucking fight. I'll put up a fight best as I can. If I have to hit him with a fucking chair, I'll hit him with a fucking chair. The fact of the matter is, I don't care who you are, you punch me in the face, we're going to have a fucking problem. So I don't know if I could sit back and take money for that. So the video came out earlier this week, late last week actually, that Conor was out in Dublin with his fucking people doing fucking shots, and he's pouring his proper 12. I got a bottle to my right here. It's a good whiskey. And he's pouring it, and people are doing shots right in the bar. And one gentleman, an older guy, white hair, got to assume he's elderly, turns it down. Clearly in the video says no. Conor just pauses for a second. He's kind of going back, but he throws his jab. Now, he's a lefty. He throws his lefty. A left jab to anyone else, a normal person, should fucking do some damage. This guy is seated. He takes it to the left side of his face, moves slightly to the right, but doesn't fall, doesn't seem like anything's broken, and all Conor's people pull him out of the bar, take him out of the bar, and remove him. So, Conor, as much as I defend you, my man, as much as I like you and you entertain and I like the sport, I like everything you represent, I need you to calm the fuck down. If you are on coke or whatever you're fucking doing, I'm one of your diehard fans. You'll probably never listen to the fucking podcast. But just in case you do, it's hard to fucking defend you. It's one thing for me to defend Tom Brady, because Tom Brady is innocent. He didn't deflate any fucking balls. I have no problem fucking defending Tom Brady because he's a good guy. He lets all his actions speak on the field. The dude never talks bad about anyone. Conor talks shit. Conor is a problem. Conor is a fucking beast. I can't defend a guy that is literally going into a bar and punching someone for turning down your drink. And you fucking punched him. I don't know if there's more to the video. I don't know if there's other words exchanged. Doesn't matter. He's an elderly man and he's seated. You're standing. And you're a trained fucking killer. It's not an average Joe. Conor McGregor has been training most of his fucking life to kill another man with his bare hands. Make no mistake about it. Boxers and MMA fighters, mixed martial artists, are trained to kill someone in the ring, in the octagon. You have to be trained on that other side to make sure you don't fucking die, to make sure you can put up a fight. Whether you get knocked out, whether the ref stops it, whether you submit, you gotta have that common knowledge. If you're another person trained as a warrior of the sport, and you are a trained killer as well, I expect two killers to get locked up in a ring, to get locked up in a cage, and go hand to hand, and one comes out the victor with hopefully minimal damage to even both of them, let alone the loser. But for a guy that's an elderly man, fuck, bro, he's sitting down, and you hit him. Now, I know in your mind, you go walk around, you got money thrown around. Look, you're going to piss through that. MC Hammer, take that case in fucking point. Look at him as an example. Do not piss your fucking money away. You're still in your prime. You're barely 30 years old. You're a dad now. You have two kids. Come back to the UFC. Take a fight or two. Fight Anthony Pettis, who just came off his fight losing to Nate Diaz. Beat him. Maybe fight Tony Ferguson. Don't go up to that 170 yet. Go fight Khabib. Win or lose, go back up to 170, or maybe convince Nate Diaz to come down to 155 and have your rubber match with Nate Diaz and call it a fucking career. That is your legacy. You were the first champ. You may not ever get another belt again, but that's okay. You're still a proven fighter. Do that. Then go spend your money. Then go enjoy retirement. Maybe get a fucking, I don't know, a Netflix TV show, or maybe star in fucking movies. Do like an Expendables remake. But as somebody who's one of your biggest fans, you can't go around punching fucking elderly dudes, let alone seated at a bar. That is a bad fucking look. And one day somebody's going to fucking do something to you. I'm not saying it's going to be that guy hitting your back. I'm saying somebody else is going to see that, and that guy's son's going to fucking stab you under your fucking ribcage, twist, and you're going to bleed the fuck out. Doesn't matter how good of a fighter you are. You don't see that fucking Shane coming from the side, you're going to fucking die, and you're going to bleed out in a bar in Dublin. That's going to be the last we hear of Conor McGregor. And nobody wants that, bro. Get your shit together. I had to say that. I had to get that out there. I'm talking from like man to man, Eastie guy to Dublin guy. That is my take on that. Another topic that is just, you know, pretty much the headline of this podcast today. Something I've been noticing. And let me give you my own personal history. I'm seeing a lot of foods out there that nobody really would ever think about eating. People are just throwing that out there because you're just getting people to talk. Now, before I get to you, like, mainstream examples, I want to give you one personal experience to go. My girlfriend and I to Boston Burger Company. First time ever, even though I know it's been around for about 5 years in Boston. I'm a big burger guy. On my cheat meals, it's a burger. I go for a cheeseburger. And then maybe pizza would be like a number two option. But for now, it's always going to be a cheeseburger right up there. And peanut butter. It's my cheat snack. So, Boston Burger Company, shout out if anybody out there from Boston Burger Company is listening. They have exquisite custom burgers that you never heard of before. They'll do some crazy shit with these fucking burgers. They also have these crazy fucking milkshakes. These things are full-blown meals on their own. We decided to go get burgers, custom burgers, a side of garlic parmesan fries, and two shakes. Now, the burger itself. What did I just say, ladies and gentlemen? I said I love a good cheeseburger on a cheat day. I said that I like peanut butter as a cheat snack. And with that said, what would happen if you put the two together? Well, Boston Burger Company just so happened to fucking do that. It's called the King. They took a cheeseburger and they get bacon and they put a little bit of cinnamon on the bacon and then they get a giant half a tub of fucking peanut butter because that's what it looked like and felt like and tasted like and slap it on the fucking burger. So I got a cheeseburger with peanut butter on it. Now, some people may say that's gross. Some of you may have already tried that out there. I wouldn't call that a nasty food, like the topic of the podcast. My girlfriend called it fucking nasty. She thought it was gross. She didn't want a bite. She kind of was grossed out by me the entire night for eating that. But I have to admit, the first bite, the texture, the flavors, the mix on the palate, on your tongue, the chewing in your mouth, and then swallowing it, it was like, Now, you're talking about a guy who's from Boston, from East Boston. I grew up on the poorest fucking foods you could think of, pasta with the milk, all this crazy shit. Also, a guy who later on went to Europe, who's dined in Paris, had escargot, who's dined in all over Rome, Florence, Venice. I've had some of the finest foods in the fucking world. My palate, I think, has improved by trying these different foods. I'll try anything once. There's very few things that I don't like. I'll eat anything almost again. Something she and I talk about. I don't like ricotta. I don't like ricotta on my fucking pasta. I'll have a ricotta pie. I don't like it. I'm as Italian. I know it's a shame, but I don't eat ravioli, lasagna, manicotti, stuffed shell. I can't fucking do it. But for some reason, I was able to eat a peanut butter fucking cheeseburger. And to me, that was not a nasty food. To other people, it would be. Ravioli is a nasty food to me. So I'm eating it, and it got better with each bite, and I liked it, and I took the whole fucking thing down. Sure, I shouldn't have done that because I barely had any room for my Nutella milkshake and it was like a fucking jar, Nutella coconut milkshake. It was like a jar of fucking Nutella mixed with ice cream and milk and whipped cream and a fucking coconut. It was so thick but so tasty. I could barely get through a tenth of the fucking shake, but it was good. Now, as that's happening, because that's my own personal story of what nasty foods are out there, and again, my nickname sometimes is Nasty T. Hasn't been in a long time because Nasty T only lives and dies in Las Vegas. I spoke about that on here before. I've been hearing these things, these other foods have been coming out. Case in point, I'll start with the basic one I saw the Instagram ad. French's Mustard put out a French's Mustard ice cream. It's ice cream flavored, it's mustard, it's a sherbet. I don't know how it is, but it showed up on my feed. And people are like, what the fuck is this? People are talking about it, and people later on saying, I wonder if it is nasty. I think I need to try it for myself. Remember what I just said right there. A couple of days ago, last week, I saw something trending. that Oscar Mayer hot dog, Oscar Mayer wiener, put out an ice cream sandwich. A hot dog ice cream sandwich. It's an ice cream sandwich. Think about your traditional Hood's ice cream sandwich with bits, pieces, chunks. I shit you not, if you have not heard this yet, of hot dog in it. And it has a version of their mustard. Mustard-flavored ice cream, hot dogs in an ice cream sandwich. Same deal. People are like, that's fucking nasty. That's fucking gross. What the fuck are you doing? Now, it's one thing for me to go into a local restaurant and sit there and eat a peanut butter burger. If that doesn't sell, they could take it off the menu and maybe try something else. To come up with something that's a mustard ice cream or a hot dog ice cream sandwich, you got to make it, you got to create it, you got to package it in a factory, you got to put it in the box, you got to freeze it, refrigerate it, you got to ship it, put it into a truck, put all this money behind the advertising, put all this manpower behind it to get it out there. That's a lot of work, a lot of fucking money, a lot of time, a lot of effort. What's really happening, though, is they know it's gross. They know it's so fucking gross that people on social media are doing all the work for them. By grossing them out, people are now having reverse effect of they're like, this shit is so gross, and I want to be one of those people that tries it before other people. I'm going to try it. Not me, but that's what people are doing out there. The gross factor, this nasty food trend, is actually getting people to go find this limited edition ice cream, this limited edition mustard ice cream, this limited edition ice cream sandwich with hot dog chunks in it. Because where can I find it? Where can I get it? It's gross. You want to be the person that has it at their cookout, the first person to have it at the kid's birthday party, to show them, like, here is the Oscar Mayer wiener ice cream fucking sandwich. This nasty food trend has to fucking stop. It's okay in local restaurants to try something different and maybe not like it and never try it again. To market something, to sell it, to show up in my Twitter feed, my Instagram feed, I am saying I no longer want to see those nasty fucking products. I have a strong stomach, but there is no need for that. As a marketing person, I get where the fuck you're going, and I can appreciate that. I see how you're getting people through viral sharing messaging, through retweets, Instagram, to stories. You're letting the people do the groundwork for you. So in a way, I kind of commend that. But the person in me who eats pretty clean all week long, who tries to enjoy his cheat days, his cheat meals, I have no desire to put a hot dog fucking ice cream in my fucking mouth. Peanut butter cheeseburgers, yes. Ice cream sandwiches, no. Another topic I want to get into real quick. I want to keep this going. It's going to be short because I've spoken about Colin Kaepernick on here several times. And he's pissed because he and the NFL put an agreement to let Jay-Z be the face of, like, social reform, partnering up with the NFL. All right, I'm a big Jay-Z fan, like Conor McGregor. I'll get right to it. We're past the nailing. We're past the protesting. We're past all that bullshit. Colin Kaepernick will never play in the NFL again. He's not a good starting quarterback. That aside, I know there's people out there that are starting that are probably not as good as him. And yes, he absolutely has been blacklisted. That aside, Jay-Z is a businessman. I know he's positioning this as social reform to help position how they can make more awareness and partner up. Bob Kraft was an advocate for him, put him up there. Roger Goodell signed the deal. Jay-Z, like I said, first and foremost, is a businessman. He is looking to make money. And he's looking to make money off the social reform. Can you make money in, well, it's a good cause at the same time? Yeah. Jay-Z is a man who does have morals. He does have merit. He basically said last year, I'm not fucking doing your Super Bowl halftime because I had a beef with the NFL because of Colin Kaepernick. Now he sat down, cooler heads prevailed. He found a business opportunity, but also to get his message out there. And he's a celebrity in his face, and he's a billionaire, has a lot of power. Kaepernick can go protest all he wants. Let's not forget, ladies and gentlemen, he signed a deal, he got paid from the NFL. So there was a lawsuit. So Kaepernick still made money off his so-called social reform. Is Jay-Z kneeling at a game? No. He took it to the boardroom. He took it to the offices. He took it to people's pockets. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but Jay is doing what Jay does. Kaepernick tried to do what Kaepernick did, but he ended up getting himself kicked out of the fucking league. Jay-Z is not at fault for all those people thinking that he's using this to make just money. He will have a message. He will do what he needs to do. Jay-Z does a lot more charity, a lot more social reform than a lot of people even fucking know. He's a reformed fucking drug dealer. The dude comes from the fucking hood. He comes from Mossy Projects. He knows what the fuck he's doing. I have no problem with what Jay-Z's doing with the NFL, even though I don't like Roger Goodell. So I had to get that out there. Last but not least, I want to throw this out there. I just saw this. It's something people from my generation, or even people older, or anyone now, but they don't do as much as they used to. The Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz came out in 1939. It is 80 years old. I cannot fucking believe that. Little Dorothy in her ruby red fucking slippers getting fucking sucked up in the fucking Twister and the tornado and landing in the fucking land of Oz. For me, it ties back to when I was a little kid. And they stopped doing this. I remember in the 80s and 90s, they would play The Wizard of Oz every Easter. And that was the only time you'd see it, once a year. Now, obviously, it streams. It's on YouTube. It's on fucking TBS, TNT. You can have the DVD. You can watch it whenever the fuck you want. But to have a movie, being a movie guy, that only show like once a year, kind of like A Christmas Story, kind of like It's a Wonderful Life, Easter and The Wizard of Oz, for me, went hand in hand. And I can't believe that movie turned 80 years old. It makes me think of my parents. It makes me think of my cousins, being a kid watching that. And again, even little boys watched it. I know a lot of girls and a lot of gay dudes love The Wizard of Oz and love Judy Garland. But that hits everybody from my generation. Regardless of your sex or sexuality, regardless of your age, regardless of how you were brought up, whether you were middle class, whether you were white, black, whether you were lower class, The Wizard of Oz from my generation, every Easter was something that you did. And everybody, regardless of where you come from, regardless of what you look like, we'll talk about it in school. Like, I can't wait to watch The Wizard of Oz. It was the same shit, the same story. You knew exactly how it was going to happen. But that's something I feel like has been missing in this world, in America, where you have a tradition based around a movie that brought people together, tied to a holiday. You remember the meals that you had. You remember your cousins, your friends, your family. You remember the smells. You remember the special gifts. I miss that. And for me to have a tradition one day, I'm hoping whether I play my own movie, something I've written, or one of my favorite all-time classics around my family, and you tie that during the holiday, and everybody's like, oh, maybe my kids or my grandkids would be like, Dad or Papa would always play that during Christmas, or he would always bust out that movie during Easter. I would love to do that because the world is missing that. But for all you people out there who love tradition, who are big on family like me, who are big on movies like me, The Wizard of Oz turned 80 years old. That hit home. And also in college, listen to Dark Side of the Moon, syncing that up. The Wicked Witch, the sounds, being high, watching that shit. Remember seeing the munchkins in the background, one of them climbing up the tree. It looked like he hung himself. You see his little legs going back and forth. The Wizard of Oz has a big impact on pop culture, big impact on people in my generation, that Gen X millennial mix. But I can't believe it turned 80 years old, 1939 to 2019. So, I know it's weird ending on The Wizard of Oz, but those are all the topics I wanted to get out tonight. Hans Zimmer's coming in. He's seeing me off. Where to find me? On Instagram, two accounts, the_T_podcast for all the podcast-related stuff. The T-Blog account for some amazing pics. On Twitter, T-Blog, all one word. Facebook, the T-Blog page. And, of course, you can reach me. Anything you want to talk about, tonight's topics, future topics, whatever you want to do. I know people email me. I'll get back to some listener questioners eventually, somewhere down the line. Email me, t@t-blog.com. And, of course, you can find me on the T-Podcast, not three times a week this week or next week because B-Lo is on break, summer vacation. He'll be back, but two times, Tuesday and Wednesday, this week and next week. Tomorrow's the birthday bash. Watch what I do there. And, of course, the place that I started it all, tblog.com, 400 episodes, all there, gives me the fodder to keep going, keep on talking about what I talk about here, because I used to write about a lot of these topics. And that's it. That's the show, everyone. Until next time, always take it there.